640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Wayne Resnick sitting in. And this gentleman is being very kind to us this morning by coming on the show after his normal availability has ended. Aaron Katursky could just go enjoy the rest of his day, but he agreed to come on for a segment with us because he's live at the scene of the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade, the 95th such parade, which is back to relative normal after a very weird alteration for last year. So, Aaron, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, it was a weird alteration, one block, virtual because of the pandemic, but now it's back. There's a giant ice cream cone now floating above my head as the giant balloons and floats and celebrities and musicians and marching bands and cheerleaders and dancers and clowns all take their place on the 2.5 mile route. And there are about 3 million spectators that the police were expecting. And I can tell you the crowd is just thrilled to be back here in person.
Now, I understand. Well, the first thing is this. Is this back to pre-pandemic in terms of the length of the route, the number of balloons, the number of other participants in the parade, and the number of spectators? Or is it still different in some way?
Oh, no, there's nothing curtailed. This is back to its full glory, as it were. And they really wanted to do it. There's clearly still some leftover pandemic precautions. Everybody in the parade must be vaccinated and wear a mask, but everything else is back as it was.
Okay, so the people on the floats are wearing masks?
Yeah, most of them. You know, some of the celebrities take them off so people can recognize who they are, and I think that's by design. But but everybody else vaccinated in a mask, and it doesn't seem to be any less for wear.
Okay, now, so who are some of the celebrities that you've seen in this parade this year?
Well, I've seen John Batiste go by, fresh from his 11 Grammy Awards, Kelly Rowland, Carrie Underwood. There's been a whole bunch. But it's funny because they're intermixed with, Foreigner and balloons and rocking horse people and clowns on stilts, and it's like this dystopian novel. But it is such good fun.
Now, so you're saying the crowd, I mean, I assume, is everybody shoulder to shoulder?
Oh, yeah. And 20 feet from the sidewalk. They can't help it. It's only so much space in New York City. Papa Smurf is getting into position.
Ah.
So things are happening here.
Yes. Now, what's the weather like?
Oh, it's gorgeous. Not a cloud in the sky. And bright sunshine illuminating the red and orange and yellow leaves still to the trees along Central Park West. It's a little chilly, but without the wind, the balloons can soar at full height. And that's really what people are excited about, those 16 giant character balloons.
And there's some new ones this year, I understand.
There are some new ones. We've seen Baby Yoda go by. We've seen, a Papa Smurf go by. He's getting into position now. He's new this year. And there's been a couple of others that Ada Twist Scientist, which is a pretty cool balloon. And of course, the highlight of all of this is going to be Santa Claus at the end, although he's a familiar face.
Okay, now, what time were people gathering in the street to get to watch this parade? Like, how far in advance?
Oh, they're here at about 4 o'clock in the morning. The state got a spot bundled up, with all sorts of thermoses of coffee and sleeping bags and folding chairs. So people make a morning of it for sure.
I this is a little delicate, but it's very practical. What do they do about restroom facilities when they have 3 million people there?
I mean, there's no facilities. You just kind of New York City. You grin and bear it, and when you got to go, you find somewhere inside, I guess, where you can sneak off. But people are hardy, and I think
yes,
just really excited to be here because after last year was curtailed and virtual, just to get outside again and to gather again seems like what people are most excited about.
Do you notice Anything interesting or different than previous years with regard to security measures? Or does it seem the same?
It's pretty secure. It's pretty secure. There are thousands of officers. You know, they're on rooftops. They're in the crowd. They've got all sorts of tactical vehicles around, blocker cars at intersections. That's predated Waukesha, but it was on their mind. So the crowd didn't have to think about security. They can just come out and enjoy it.
All right. Aaron, thank you so much. I know that you could have said, you simply could have said, I'm sorry, KFI's too late for me today, but you didn't. So I appreciate it. And please enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of that parade. Thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And to you. There he goes. Aaron Katursky having a good time at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. All right. Let's get some news from Amy King. And then when we come back, somebody turned 100 this year, and I want to talk about her, and I want to talk about her even though she's not real. Yet, you all know the name. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Amy King, some news, please. KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Happy Thanksgiving to you all. It's the Bill Handel Show. Wayne Resnick sitting in. Amy King is here in for Jennifer Jones-Lee. Alex and Tyler are here. Thank you guys for being here. Let us wish a happy 100th birthday to a woman who does not exist. Betty Crocker.
What do you mean she doesn't exist? There's no such thing as, there's no person Betty Crocker?
That is correct. Here's how Betty Crocker came to, quote, be. And you have to go back to 1921, Saturday Evening Post. They did a promotion where you could complete a jigsaw puzzle and mail it in for a prize. And it was a promotion by the company that was the parent company of Gold Medal Flour. I think they were called the Washburn Crosby Company. Well, the advertising department got way more responses than they were expecting. People loved this promotion. They put together this puzzle. They sent it in. But they sent in other things, too. Questions. They were asking for cooking advice. Here's my jigsaw puzzle that I completed. And also, how do I make a gravy that doesn't separate? So they wanted to respond to people's questions. And you, of course, we all understand it's 1921. There's no email. There's no social media account. This is all handwritten letter, maybe typed, and putting them in the mail. And they had people doing it. But what they wanted to do is, they said, listen, we're responding to all these people. We can't say like, hi, to make a gravy that doesn't separate, do whatever. By the way, I don't know how to make a gravy that doesn't separate. I buy my gravy in the store like a real man. But you won't want it to say like, sincerely, Jim Thomas from Washburn Crosby Company Marketing. So they invented the character of Betty Crocker was a customer service tool so that people would feel, well, they would think, I guess at first, they would think they were getting a response from a woman who is an excellent cook instead of from one of the several dudes in their advertising department. They picked the name Betty because at that time it seemed very familiar and very friendly. And Crocker was the last name of a former executive that everybody had really liked. Of course, she had to sign these letters, but she didn't exist. So they had to come up with a signature. So they had a bunch of different female employees submit, like say, hey, sign your name, Betty Crocker. And they picked one that they liked. Well, Betty Crocker became a household name. They got so many letters to Betty Crocker with cooking questions that they had to train people to forge, maybe forge is not the fair word, to recreate the same signature. So now you had a bunch of people who could sign Betty Crocker the same way. Then, of course, they had to come up with a face. Now, you'll notice there are no photographs of Betty Crocker. There couldn't be. I guess today, with today's technology, you might be able to do a super photorealistic CGI Betty Crocker. But back in the day, they had to have somebody paint a portrait of Betty Crocker. They first did this in 1936. And then over the years, there's been some development, evolution of Betty Crocker. Betty Crocker was a cultural juggernaut. There was a radio show, a Betty Crocker radio show. Tons of cookbooks came out. Betty Crocker cookbooks. And this was a real media personality, even though she didn't exist. So one of the things about cookbooks, I don't know if you read cookbooks. Sometimes I'll just read cookbooks because a lot of cookbooks aren't just the recipes. The author will put in little stories that go along with some of the recipes. And it gives you more than just here's a bunch of recipes. It gives you a sense of time, a sense of place. Of course, Betty Crocker, not a real person, doesn't have any actual real stories from her life. So there was a committee that basically wrote those cookbooks. There were staff that tested the recipes, and for the personal history, they would have people write little anecdotes. But they never tried to fool you into thinking that a woman named Betty Crocker came up with all of these recipes. If you have a Betty Crocker cookbook, the head notes for every recipe make it clear which actual real live person came up with the recipe that's in the book. So here, now here, you want to talk about changing times. I don't think this would fly today at all. But back in 1933, they issued a Betty Crocker. It was just like a pamphlet of recipes for cakes called New Party Cakes for All Occasions. And in it was this little story of two brides. You had the good bride and the bad bride. The good bride had been dutifully listening to the Betty Crocker radio show. And the other bride was like winging it like a loser. Now that message is not very subtle. It's pretty much if you want to be a good wife, you better be good at baking things. And it was marketing, too, and you better buy the right flour. That would not work today, but Betty Crocker has sort of been updated over the years. Currently, the picture portrait of Betty Crocker is a composite. They got about 70 photographs of real women, and they kind of did a composite thing and had somebody paint it up. Because now Betty Crocker is a symbol. I don't think even most people don't think Betty Crocker is an actual person at this point. Betty Crocker is this character, but really Betty Crocker is this idea. So there you go. A happy 100th birthday. And here's the best thing about a fake person having their 100th birthday. You don't have to get them anything. All right, let's get some news from Amy King. And then we're going to talk about booze for a bit. Now, there's somebody on this show who I understand is an actual bartender. So I'm going to have a couple of questions for Tyler as we talk about some booze-related stories going on at this holiday time of year. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app. Amy King, some news, please. This is me, I'm a liquor store blues. I'll take one shot for my pain. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Wayne Resnick sitting in today. Neil couldn't do it. He had gum surgery just yesterday. So his mouth, I'm sure, is not feeling so great. Let's all send him super fast gum suture healing wishes now. Let's talk a little booze, because nothing says holiday season like booze. So the first thing I want to bring up is, you may remember, because it was, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so, Arby's, in a stunt, came out with this French fry flavored vodka. It's a real product, but it's obviously a marketing gimmick. I think it's like $55 for a bottle of it. And they infused the flavors of curly fries into a vodka, because you can infuse anything into a vodka.
What do you use for a mixer? Ketchup?
I don't know. I don't want it.
It actually might be kind of good in a Bloody Mary. I was just about to say
a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Ah, okay. Fair enough. Well, you can try. You can spend $55 and let me know how that works out with the French fry.
I don't think I'm going to do that. But if you would like me to taste test it and you would like to provide it to me, I would be happy to assist.
Okay.
Garnish it with a hot dog?
I will be. What's interesting to me about the whole infused vodka thing is the whole point of vodka is it's supposed to be a completely neutral spirit. But now they want to flavor it with every dang thing, including, although not including, this is just a transition into this product, which is a whiskey. Although you could make the same argument that, whiskey is certainly not a neutral spirit, but you could certainly make the argument that whiskey is just supposed to be whiskey. And if you're going to monkey around with your whiskey, you monkey around with things like the mash, the mix of the mash, or how much you age it, or what barrels you age it. Not what these guys have done. Tamworth Distilling in New Hampshire took a whiskey, and then they made, in the traditional way, as if you were going to eat this meal, they made an entire Thanksgiving meal. Corn, chestnuts, apples, squash, sweet potatoes, stuffing, a roast turkey. They made this meal and then they infused it into the bourbon. And then just for you, I know bourbon heads are like, what kind of still did they use? They redistilled it on a rotary evaporator still, if you must know. And apparently it's whiskey that tastes like a Thanksgiving dinner.
Is it like Willy Wonka where it hits you at different times?
I don't know. Or if you drink when you're not supposed to, do you turn into a turkey? I don't know.
You mean like Violet Beauregard turned into a blueberry?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Precisely.
Interesting.
It's not a stunt the way that the Arby's French fry vodka is a stunt. I mean, this is a craft distillery. They've done some other things, though. They made a venison whiskey.
Ew.
Yeah. They made something that they called Eau de Musc. It was a whiskey flavored with the oil extract from the castor gland of the North American beaver, which is a nice way of saying they made a whiskey with beaver butt. So I guess they're known for such things. And they say they were inspired to make this Thanksgiving dinner infused whiskey by something called Mezcal de Pechuga. Apparently, this is also a thing. They make mezcal. This they don't. But in the world, I guess probably mostly in Mexico, they'll make a mezcal and then they'll redistill it with raw chicken or turkey breast hanging
raw
in the still. Yes. Oh,
why?
No. Okay, this just seems not enjoyable to me. Now, let's talk about some things that are very enjoyable to the people who drink them, but very not enjoyable, apparently, to the bartender that you asked to make it. And I would like to start with, apparently, what is the fad drink this year? It's the Four Loko of this year. It's the vodka Red Bull of this year. The espresso martini. And Tyler, who is a bartender, nodding your head in recognition. Yes?
That's correct. Yes. I am recognizing that drink is awful to make.
So but delicious to drink, I might add.
Oh, well, this is the problem. Yes, delicious to drink, pain in the butt for the bartender. Supposedly invented in London. A model, sounds like the beginning of a joke, and it's not. A model went into a bar and asked the bartender for a drink that would, I can't say all the words she said, so I'll change one of the words, but supposedly said, I want a drink that'll wake me up and then mess me up. And the bartender came up with this espresso martini. So I would imagine the biggest problem with making an espresso martini is that you have to pull a shot of espresso as part of the process of making what maybe otherwise is a martini. Not that many bars have true espresso machines. So bartenders do not like it when you order this. And the problem is everybody's ordering these all the time now because they've become a fad.
And you know what else? The servers are suggesting them because I went to a lovely little establishment a couple weeks ago and she said, oh, you should have an espresso martini. And I was like, oh, what a lovely idea. I mean, like, I didn't even think of it until she mentioned it.
This would probably lead to fist fights in the parking lot between the bartending staff and the serving staff over this. So some bartenders will make a point of not having espresso so that if when the people ask for it, they say, I'm sorry, I can't make that for you because they don't want to. So, Tyler, you're an actual working bartender. Is this accurate that this is a very annoying drink when people order it?
I would say it's challenging. The challenge is that 9 times out of 10, your bar isn't located near or close to where your coffee is brewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're busy in the bar and you're making drinks and you're making drinks and then all of a sudden something along the lines of an espresso martini comes through, then you have to scramble. Hey, so-and-so, can you bring me some coffee? Because I've never worked in a restaurant that's had espresso. So, hey, so-and-so, bring me some coffee. Then, in addition to having to deal with getting the coffee, you're dealing with a hot product with a bunch of ice and glass. And so then
does
you
run this in, make the top of the shaker pop off sometimes?
Well, no, you run into the issue of the temperature variation in the glassware. And if you have glassware that's too hot and you pour cold product into it.
Smash-o. All right. Now, listen, let's get some news from Amy King. And I want to continue the booze talk a little bit longer because as annoying as apparently this espresso martini is to bartenders, there's another drink that is has been crowned the most annoying drink that you can order. And I should qualify this, of the canon of classic defined cocktails. I mean, obviously you could try to make something up to make it even more annoying to a bartender, but of the already existing, quote, classic cocktails, this is the one that it has the most likelihood of your bartender murdering you for ordering it. And I'll reveal what it is and why it's so annoying. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Amy King, you have some news. KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Bill Handel's show, Wayne Resnick sitting in on Thanksgiving. If you were expecting Neil Saavedra, he could not do it this year because yesterday he had gum surgery. And you know where your gums are. They're in your mouth. And that's the same hole that your voice comes out of. So now he really wanted to do it. And he actually was thinking he might be able to do it. And then I was tapped to be sort of on standby. And we had an intervention with him the other day and said, why don't you call Cunning Dental where you're going to go and have this done? And why don't you ask them what they think about you hosting a 4-hour show the very day after they do what they're going to do to your mouth? And he came back after talking to them and said, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do it. So good for him for not making his mouth worse. Now, we are in the middle of KFI's annual Pastathon, the 11th annual KFI Pastathon. And because of your great support over the years, Chef Bruno's charity provides over 25,000 meals to children in need every week all across Southern California. There's a bunch of ways that you can help. First, I'm going to tell you how you can help, and then I'm going to tell you about some treats. You can donate at pastathon.com. 100% of your donation goes to Katarina's Club. You can go into any Smart and Final store in California, Arizona, or Nevada, and you can donate $10 at checkout. You just tell the person at checkout, I want to donate 10 bucks to Pastathon. That $10 provides 14 meals to the kids, courtesy of Barilla Pasta. You can also get your own pasta and sauce together and drop it off at the Anaheim White House restaurant from now, right? You know, are they doing this today on Thanksgiving? Let's assume they're not today. But starting again tomorrow and every day through December 4th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., you go to the Anaheim White House restaurant with your pasta and sauce, put it in your trunk. You don't have to get out of your car. Volunteers will collect your donations. Bring a lot. Let's get these volunteers bulked up. Pull in all those heavy, heavy cases of sauce out of your car. And you can also, if you don't want to go to the Anaheim White House restaurant, maybe it's too far, there are other drop-off locations. You can find them at pastathon.com. Tim Conway Jr. will be broadcasting live on Giving Tuesday, November 30th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Anaheim White House. And every show here on KFI is going to have a virtual live Instagram hour during Pastathon. Wednesday, December 1st, wake-up call from 5 to 6 a.m. Friday, December 3rd, this very program, The Bill Handel Show, will be doing that. I have not been provided with the other shows, or I would be happy to promote them. All right, so let's finish this up. We were talking about booze. We were talking about the espresso martini really annoying your bartender when you order it. And now we come to the single most annoying cocktail that you could order. Please don't. It is called the Ramos Gin Fizz. Now, as I understand things, you have a regular gin fizz, which is not a big deal. It's what, gin and sugar and soda and some citrus in there. If you add an egg white to it, you have something called a silver fizz. That sounds disgusting. No offense. But if you add some cream and some orange flower water and one other thing, you get a Ramos Gin Fizz invented by a guy actually named Ramos. Henry Charles Ramos had a bar in New Orleans in the late 1800s, and he invented this drink. And even though he made his living selling booze, he hated drunk people. The second you were a tiny bit drunk, he would kick you out, and he closed his bar at 8 p.m. every day. But he did invent this drink with the ingredients I told you, and you have to shake it for 12 minutes. Because if you have egg white and you have cream, you've got to, you're basically whipping that into a meringue. 12 minutes of shaking that thing. Now, Tyler, you are a bartender. Has anybody ever ordered a Ramos Gin Fizz from you?
No, fortunately.
Do you now dread that somebody might?
My hourly rate would go way up for a 12-minute shake.
Yeah, that is something that is just flat-out rude to do to a bartender.
Not to mention it completely hinders your ability to fulfill the rest of the order.
Yeah, you can't make any other drinks, and you're going to wear out your arms. Now,
or lift your arms for 2 days.
Yeah, here's what Ramos did.
What was that thing called, the shake weight?
Oh, yeah, that shake weight vibrating thing. Yeah. It's like that.
Yeah, think of the workout you'd get, Tyler.
Here's what he did, and this is true. He had a team of shaking assistants to handle the amount of shaking of this cocktail that had to be done. Please don't do it. Please don't take this information I've given you and weaponize it against a bartender this holiday season. Let's get some news from Amy King, and then we are going to hit a couple of bigger news stories, and then we're going to go back to having some lighter fun. But there's a couple of massive things in the news, including that big verdict in the Ahmaud Arbery murder case yesterday, which I predicted would come in yesterday. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app.